You can
go
have
ahead.
Your water, and I don't want to.
We're all ears. Go ahead.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director for the Home Builders Association. We're passing you out our PowerPoint so you don't have to take notes. And we're also passing out our recommendations at the end, which we're going through all along here. And I think I have answers to questions about what happens to building in the interim, but they'll be in the middle of the proposal. So I think we want to start off by thanking you for the extra time, and we want to publicly commend your staff. We've spent a lot of time, particularly with Dominic and Tamara, and I don't want you to hold our praise against them, but we found them to be very professional, courteous, friendly. They've been informative, and they've always been available to us. We want to focus on four main issues, actually three issues, and the first point I want to clarify, that's why there are four points up there. We want to emphasize that we are not opposing hydro modification controls on suburban land. And in lieu of the conversations before, I want to also emphasize that we're not saying anything against applying LID in an urban environment. We have specific concerns with specific pieces of applying things to smart growth, urban infill, and redevelopment. But we're not against LID, and we're not opposing anything on suburban land. We think we can live with this. But we are deeply concerned about some of the negative impacts that some of the hydro modification controls are going to have on smart growth, whether you want to call that redevelopment, urban infill, or whatever. We're also very interested in making sure that all of the communities have adequate time to develop effective and reasonable interim hydro modification controls. And the last thing is we want to focus on the difference between pre-development and pre-project as a definition and how it impacts smart growth. We do have a couple of caveats we want to make sure we're on board right up front. Is we spent a lot of time trying to come up with real-world examples, and unfortunately we're in the middle of a recession, and we have very, very few people building anywhere on the Central Coast. In addition to that, we found that even those who were building, there's very few projects that have applied the stormwater applications that are on the table in this discussion, so we don't really have a track record that we could fully analyze and be comfortable with. But we did hear yesterday that there is a project that's going to be presented, I think, next or one of the other speakers, that will give you an example of how these regulations can make something financially impossible to do in an urban infill environment. So since we didn't have the projects that we wanted, we relied on what we consider to be credible sources in their publications, Federal Environmental Protection Agency, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and the California Stormwater Quality Association. We think there's probably a lot of agreement, certainly we're on board with the concept, that combating climate change is going to require doing more to promote smart growth. Smart growth is not going to be easy to do, and it's not going to be publicly happy for a lot of people who don't want more housing in their neighborhood. But it's a good thing, and we think stormwater needs to work with it. We actually think that smart growth is good stormwater management planning, because anything that you can do to put more people and serve more people on the same amount of impervious surface area has to be better than adding any emphasis on making the build in a suburban environment and increasing the impervious surface area. So we think smart growth and stormwater management should work hand in hand. We think that was one of the concerns that the EPA raised, and it's using smart growth techniques as stormwater best management practices. I even have a copy of the. And what they note is that there are certain things in smart growth that there are certain hydro modification controls that can hinder smart growth. And they're specific. It's requiring the post-development hydrology to match the pre-development hydrology. And I'm going to jump ahead and emphasize here that what that is a reference to is pre-construction, going back to what we call Chumash, when there was nobody here. That's going to be a very, very cost-expensive thing to do if that is the requirement for urban infill. BMPs in an urban environment that require replicating the natural systems are going to take up an enormous amount of urban land. That's a concern. And being too restrictive on your coverage of impervious surface in an urban environment is going to be another problem that will prevent smart growth. What we want you to think of on this is that it's a trade-off, is encouraging people to build inside the urban envelope will reduce the pressure to build outside of it. So you reduce the need to increase the surface area, impervious surface area. That's our focus on what we're trying to get across today. I'm going to skip through this pretty much because you've heard a lot on the three projects. I have a lot of respect for Tamara, but I just want to clarify a little error she made. The problem with the rapid infiltration rate was not on the Chevron project. That was on the Habitat project. The water was running through so quickly, it wasn't having a chance to filter out. I believe the problem with the Chevron is a very similar problem, is that the water was running through so quickly, it was mingling with gas fumes from the, or gas residue from the tanks that were there before. So it was a water quality problem, I believe, with gasoline underneath. I don't know if Chevron's here, but that's what I heard from the city. They can correct me if I'm wrong. Just wanted to clarify those things, that the Habitat was the problem with the water running through quickly. And I also want to explain that, you know, Chevron and Taco were big companies, and most of the people who build in Grover Beach are small, little builders and family mom and pop shop. So they don't have a lot of money to weigh through that. So anyway, we'll skip through that slide so I don't use up my 15 minutes of fame. The Water Board staff was aware of our concerns on this, and in their latest report, they said that they find hydromodification controls are fundamentally consistent with smart growth strategies, and they referenced us to a Richard McCune paper called Hydrological Philosophy of Smart Growth. We read the paper, and we didn't really find anything in that paper that supported staff's contention that low-impact development and hydromodification are fundamentally consistent with smart growth strategies. What we saw in that paper was something that was entirely theoretical. It's already 6 years old. It focused on developing guiding hydrological principles for smart growth. It does not examine the potential negative impacts that hydromodification controls can have on smart growth. It references data that's 8 to 45 years old, contains no current real-world examples or any local data. And we just don't believe that references to what happens with science on the East Coast is always applicable to what happens on the Central Coast. So as you can probably tell, we have been publicly in support of smart growth. But San Luis Obispo is still a rural county. Only 3% of the entire county is urbanized. And there's very little urbanized land left for smart growth. So any stormwater requirements that restrict or further restrict that land is going to make smart growth much harder to accomplish. We went to the EPA publication because it was more current than McCune. It's based on EPA experience. You're implementing an EPA stormwater permit. So we don't think there's any question at all that the EPA is a more credible source than McCune, and that EPA should be the guiding principle that you're using on this. And I still say that based on, I listened to what Roger said before, and we will get back to that. The way this works from a development standpoint are BMPs that raise building costs and reduce the amount of available urban infill land are going to reduce the physical feasibility of smart growth projects. They're going to encourage sprawl by making urban land too expensive to use. That's going to create more impervious surface area, and it's going to undermine your goal. We really think stormwater plans should encourage smart growth, and that smart growth should be exempted from the BMPs and requirements that EPA cites as hindrances. That was our first main point. The second point we wanted to emphasize is the deadline for developing interim hydromodification criteria. And we're kind of in agreement with the city on this. We really think that the best science is going to result if local communities have adequate time to properly research and compare various interim hydromodification criteria. We actually think 2 years is probably a little on the quick side. But we also know that staff was really pushing the 1 year, and so we proposed 2 years as a compromise. We thought that would be enough time for people to test different criteria in local conditions, soil, hydrology, and geology. We also base our recommendation on our conversations with developers in Southern California who are a little bit further down the road in terms of stormwater management plans. And we were at a meeting of the Technical Advisory Committee for the county in which the Central Coast LID Center's head person agreed that 1 year is just not a reasonable amount of time to come up with interim criteria. So several of you have asked about how many developments are going to occur in that time and what the impact will be. And I'll start with the specifics of Grover Beach. Grover has 5,300 homes right now. In an average year over the last 20 years, it's built 52 new homes. Last year, it built 17. This year, it's at one half of that pace. Everybody I represent was going to tell you that there's going to be very few homes built in the next 2 years. So the chance of having any major projects or even most projects go through while the city is spending 2 years coming up with good interim criteria is pretty small. And certainly, if you're comparing 50 homes in a year versus the 5,300 that are there, it isn't new construction that would be having any impact. So just wanted to put those numbers out there. Countywide, in case you're interested, just county has 120,000 homes. The average number in a year is 1,400 new. Last year was 500. This year our pace is 70% below last year. So there are very few new construction projects that are going through. The recession, unfortunately, is controlling that. Ruben? We're really concerned, we talk to the cities all the time, and we're really concerned that a one-year deadline is to develop the interim criteria is going to put a lot of pressure on them to select something off the shelf without adequate time to do research or analysis. As the city was pointing out to you, this is just about the worst time to put pressure on them. They have no money. They're all cutting staff. We just don't think adding to the workload at this time is going to produce good science or quality work. So we think that's really important. We certainly believe that the TAC is also working on developing interim criteria. And to me, that's a much better approach than having seven different cities trying to come up with their own. The California Stormwater Quality Association, in its June 27th letter last year to your executive officer, noted that doing appropriate scientifically valid research on interim criteria will take more than a year. And then it cited large cities in the Bay Area with obviously have more staff and more money, and they've already spent more than a year, and they haven't resolved the question yet of what is good interim criteria. So expecting little cities on the Central Coast to do what big cities can't is not realistic. That's why we're recommending 2 years. The last item is on the pre-development definition of pre-development versus pre-project. It's requiring smart growth to recreate the original hydrological condition is going to present an insurance liability. I chose nightmare, quagmire, but it's really a nightmare. You're going to change the underground water storage or infiltration volume. That is going to threaten every project, every building next door. Insurers are going to look at that and they're going to go, that is a really risky development. I'm not going to fund it. I'm not going to insure it. Or I'm going to charge you so much for the insurance, it's going to make the project prohibitive to build. So that kind of a cost increase is clearly going to discourage smart growth. We also don't think that redevelopment should be forced to correct the sins of the past. And we don't think new development can correct the sins of the past because there's simply not enough of it that occurs, going back to the numbers I gave you a few seconds ago. We don't have an unlimited supply of money, and we're having minimal impacts on the watershed compared to the existing structures and developments. In Roger's comments before, he said that the same language we were concerned about was used to reference language that fosters creating joint smart growth and stormwater policies. If you read that whole section, what it really says is that's true when you write your ordinance so you avoid the confusion and you define pre-development as pre-project. So if that is the definition of pre-development, if it's pre-project, we would agree. But if the definition is that it has to be pre-development when there was no development on the site, that is not going to be something that a redevelopment project can obtain. it's simply not going to work. In addition, we support the, would you go back, Urban? Thank you. We also think that the staff definition is fine in the final table of required revisions. It defines pre-development. It says it refers to the soil type, vegetation, and amount of impervious surface existing on the site prior to the development project. If that's okay in one of the three options that are there, we don't really understand why it's not okay in all the options. It should be an acceptable definition of what you want to occur. So to wrap it all up, our recommendations are that you exempt smart growth infill redevelopment from the hydromodification criteria and the BMPs that EPA cites, which is requiring post-development hydrology to match pre-development hydrology, defining if you define pre-development as before there was any construction on site. We also would say BMPs that require replicating the natural systems are going to require so much land in an urban infill environment that you're going to prevent smart growth. And the impervious coverage limitations need to recognize that it's better to put development inside the urban envelope than outside of it. So you really need to address that. We also recommend 2 years to develop the interim hydromodification criteria, as I said, to define pre-development as pre-project. And we also recommend applying these changes to Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, Atascadero, and San Luis Obispo swamps, and all the other unenrolled and enrolled swamps in the county, and Santa Barbara County when we get down to those again. So that would be our recommendation. We support the city, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions from the board? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bunin. Is Craig Campbell with your group? The Wallace Group? Is that with your...
Well, they're a member, but he's not speaking for the Home Builders Association.
Okay, because it's it. All right.
He does have a project he's going to talk to you about.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you. I'm here today, as just mentioned, to talk about a specific infill smart growth project and how that relates to stormwater management plans.
And could you speak up a little louder so everybody could hear you?
Yeah, and I'll get a little closer. How's
okay.
that? Okay. Okay. I want to talk about an example project, the Pacific Courtyards Project. It's here in the city of San Luis Obispo, soon to be constructed. It's a project that is smart growth. It's mixed use, commercial and residential. It is high density where high density belongs and reduces urban sprawl. It improves water quality. The existing site is a nearly fully paved parking lot. It's directly connected to the storm drain system and to the creeks, and every time it rains, parking lot pollutants enter the watershed. This infill project fully covers that parking lot. It reconstructs it as a basement parking lot with the mixed use three levels above that. As such, it completely removes that existing pollutant stream from the watershed, as well as the inherent benefits of the mixed-use smart growth infill project, reducing urban sprawl. So we think it's a highly desirable project. We think it's a project that is good for water quality. We see existing stormwater management plans being adopted that would work against a project like that and are concerned that we don't want this new one and others to follow suit. Specifically, Salinas and Santa Barbara plans, their triggers for hydromodification are include disturbance of existing impervious area. If you disturb that parking lot and bury it and cover it, you have to do hydromodification. And furthermore, go to two pre-development levels, increasing that. If you're trying to do a dense infill project with a buried garage, you don't have room to do a basin, and it's a buried basement. Where are you going to put it? You have to elevate it in the middle of your building or shrink your building, which isn't suitable for that downtown area. I was very encouraged by something I heard in the staff presentation, and I wasn't clear about if it was a discussion or a policy. And that was adherence to Grover's policy of the trigger for needing retention was based on 40% increase of existing impervious areas. And I think that's appropriate. I wasn't clear if it was being adopted or being discussed, but it would be very encouraging.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Any questions or comments for the speaker? Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Campbell.
You. Okay.
Urban McClellan, then Gordon Hensley and Kim Busby. That's my last speaker card.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Urban McClellan. I'm a member of the Home Builders Association. And I'd just like to perhaps add a couple of comments and clarification to what Jerry spelled out, the three items we were asking for. As a matter of fact, handed out to you was a sheet, the last sheet. And what we did is, if you chose to go forward on our recommendations, and I hope you would, there is some language specified for each one of the ones that could be incorporated into the plan. Specifically, the first one related to the EPA book report that Roger also discussed. And one point we wanted to make, by following the EPA criteria, essentially, the saying these things are things you shouldn't do, we are not saying that you don't do LID. I think that's, we're getting confused here. There's hydro modification control criteria, and then there's low impact development planning techniques. So we're saying, we're not talking about the LID techniques. We're talking about hydro modification criteria. So point one is exempt smart growth infill from problem HMC and BMPs that the EPA report cites. So specifically, we've said add applicability criteria in the swamp that essentially spells out these restrictions that should be avoided. Secondly, I've also added some language regarding the two-year limit. And I think both the city and us agree, certainly as relative to the interim hydro modification criteria, that 2 years should be the timeline to achieve that interim, the development of the interim hydro modification criteria. Finally, the discussion of pre-project. And I had a discussion with Tamara. Thankfully, she spent some time with me. Thank you, Tamara. Trying to pound into my head, which was a little bit hard, the distinctions between pre-project, pre-development, and pre-construction. Thinking about it first thing this morning, I thought that a better way to do this is to say, define the hydraulic baseline, which basically is the existing condition, as pre-project. Rather than getting all tied up with pre-development, pre-construction, et cetera, let's say the hydraulic baseline for analysis is the pre-project condition, which is, as stated in the staff report, the condition immediately prior to the proposed project. And it's both referenced in the supplemental sheet table one under pre-project and the final table of required revision items by staff, number six, option three, first bullet. So two places we agree with staff on a definition for pre-project, and we think what the swamp should say is the hydrologic baseline should be pre-project.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Mr. McClellan? Okay. I think we'll have some questions for staff about that issue once we complete our speakers. Mr. Hensley?
Chairman Young, Honorable Board, I'm Gordon Hensley, the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. We have submitted on behalf of our 800 Central Coast supporters our documents. You've already referred to those. In those documents, some of our major concerns are outlined, and primarily among that is that the stormwater permit that you're looking at has already been compromised. City staff and your staff have worked very diligently at coming to some level of compromise. The fact that it doesn't actually meet the strict letter of the law, and Chairman Young has explained some of the MEP issues that we've had with this, is the core of our issue. We are supportive of staff where they are now. We would encourage you to not compromise this permit any further. You've already carried on much of the discussion of what was the core of what I had to say to you. I encourage you to continue going there. We urge you to take Mr. Briggs' suggestion, enroll the city today. There is an annual review of these permits, and all of the issues that have been brought before you today can be worked out in the same negotiation with your staff, their staff, the Builders Association, and they can talk about the details and the rationale for why any one BMP may or may not work. We are far behind in the enrollment deadline already. Continuing this for another 2 years does not seem to be moving us any closer to the goals that are before you. And as one of the board members already said, I don't believe that delaying this for 2 years is going to make these hydromods, the BMPs, any cheaper or easier. I guess conversely to that, I didn't hear any guarantee that if you gave them 2 years, there would be no question about the permit in 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, I noticed here that Kim Busby's card said that she did not want to speak, and I could read your comments on the back.
Very
but
good.
Okay, but then I do have a question for you. So I'll read your comment here. The MEP expectations, ever-evolving, ever-changing, in Region 3 exceed requirements in other regions. These additional BMPs make implementation of an effective program more cost-prohibited. My question is, which BMPs are you referring to?
Good, a good question. Kim Busby, I work for Cal Poly. I was, you know, kind of going back to where we were in 2003. What kind of the expectations were in 03 when the plans were first being developed, and Grover presented the changes and the additional BMPs that evolved over this whole process. Specifically, those that are not going to be effective in the process, that are going to cost more money than some other kind of opportunity. When looking at the statewide program, and I've been working really closely with CASCA and the new Phase 2 permitting, how can we be consistent across the state and across our regions to implement these programs that are better for all of us to work together collaboratively? So an example, providing the LID center and providing our region with this one center way to go to improve our plans, to improve our projects, would be something that we would want to continue to do.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
All right. That concludes my speaker cards. What would the board like to do? Do we need a break for a few minutes, or
Mr. Chairman,
come back to staff? Or
yeah, what we would like to do is respond to a lot of the comments that we've received, and to do that most effectively, it would be great if we could take a little break and put our notes together.
Okay.
And it's been 3 hours.
Right.
So
okay. Good. So let's say 11:45.
Okay.
11:45.